You could stand at half court and ref better than these guys.
Knocks one down and is called for another foul.
Tic Tacko, come on.
Tacko's having some fun here.
And we are back with another episode of From the Rafters. Sam and I are here recording on Friday, September 10th. We got a great show planned for you guys. We have Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report coming on later in the episode to talk. But before that, Hall of Fame inductees is happening. So I wanted to touch base about that. Three Celtics, Sam. Three Celtics 2021.
Three Celtics legends. I got to write for Channel 6 today. Got to write about that. They kind of took what I used and actually put it on the news, which was nice. But yeah, Paul Pierce going in, well-deserved, better than people think. Bill Russell going in as a coach first, black coach in the NBA, player coach for the Celtics, coach Seattle, and legend. Coach Sacramento. Obviously one of the greats. I always love to make the argument he's the greatest of all time. 11 titles, can't argue with that. Best player on the best team 11 times. And then, of course, the great Mike Gorman going in. Paul Pierce is my favorite player, so I'm happy for that too. But Mike Gorman, I'm very happy for him. Love Mike Gorman. Mike Gorman is my dream interview. Would love to have him on the show sometime. If we ever spin that, that'll be Sam salivates on Cam. but seriously, he's one of the greats. He's been at it for 40 years. Play by play. So many. He's seen it all. Bird to the dark years in the 90s to Pierce, and then the big three, and then Isaiah, then Kyrie, now in the Tatum era. He's seen all of it. Great calls through all of it. Well-deserved to him. Excited to see him probably tune in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Pierce, Gorman, Bill Russell, there's not really a better Celtics class that they could have picked for this. Like you said, Mike Gorman, that would probably be the dream interview. Our good friend Adam Taylor had the chance. I am eternally jealous for
very
that.
Lucky.
Hopefully one day we'll get that chance.
He earned it, but
deserved. No, no,
jealous.
No. Lucky in the sense that I am jealous. It was a very well-deserved interview, of course. Other names in the 2021 Hall of Fame class: Chris Webber, Chris Bosh, Ben Wallace, Tony Kukoc. Ben Wallace having some very interesting things to say about Kevin Durant. We don't have to spend too long on it.
No. What did he say? I
want to bring it up.
Hear this.
He basically said
live reaction
that,
to this.
He basically said that Kevin Durant would not have been as good in his era. Like, he wouldn't have been the level of player that he is, which I think is absolutely,
like, that's not fair.
That's horrendous. Kevin Durant's a 7-foot, one of the best scorers of all time. You're telling me he wouldn't have been?
I also don't think he's like soft.
I agree.
Like, the way he plays, like, if you want to say he's soft for joining the Warriors or whatever, fine, like, say it. I mean, you got to respect what he did. He kept LeBron from winning for a couple years, so he's an honorable man. But seriously, like, his game is crazy. He would probably be just as good, if not better, because he'd be able to drill shots from the mid range. I mean, watching him play the Celtics in the playoffs is unreal. Dude was not missing. He was like a cheat code.
Mm-hmm. He's elite. He's one of the best of all time. And I hate, like, I think I've said this on here before. I don't know if I've said it recently. I cannot stand the people who are like, oh, basketball is not the same. Basketball is bad now. Stop fucking watching.
It's not
bad.
Just
complain,
it's different.
Yeah, it's different. That's fine. But if you're going to complain that, oh, we're not punching each other in the face, then grow up. Like, stop. Like, come on.
Yeah, you don't want people getting hurt.
Exactly.
I think this year is going to be a really great year, should the referees keep up their end of the deal and monitor the good old jumping into defenders. And
I'm glad that's gone.
Going back. I mean, Harden's going to be out of a job.
Mm-hmm. Poor guy. That was ridiculous. That was absolutely ridiculous. I'm trying to think. I had a mind part there. I was about to start talking about the Juancho trade, but we caught that last time. I did want to touch on the starting lineup. I think we covered it very briefly in our last episode when we were talking about player expectations, but I do want to know your thoughts on who will be the full-time starters to start the season for the Celtics. Do you think it's going to be obviously Brad Stevens last season went with rotating guys, started double bigs, and he changed it up by the end of the season. Ime Udoka's got the reins now. What are you thinking for the starting lineup in Boston?
Well, it's definitely going to be Marcus. He has highlighted Marcus in interviews over and over again. he's mentioned him as he wants the ball in his hands. You know, he is instilling confidence in him as the starting point guard, which I've said it before, I'm excited for. I think in that role he can really flourish. Might have said some things that needed to be overturned about that. But seriously, he has a good opportunity to really improve as a player this year and to earn a lot of people's respect. He's a really great passer. He deserves the recognition for that, and hopefully he can earn it. This is the two guard spot. I think we talked about this last time, is really tough because you've got Richardson, who's proven, is coming off a down year, according to people. I don't know. Did not watch all that much of the Mavericks. I don't watch a whole lot of other teams.
He had a tough year shooting the ball.
But he's someone that's proven. He was really great in Miami. Obviously, when he played in Philly, he was there. He was a pain in the ass. He could play defense. He's a solid player. And he's got more help around him. Obviously, Luka's fantastic. But besides that, there wasn't a lot in terms of real, like, superstars. You know, you got Tatum and Brown here. Marcus Smart, who's good, too. He could be a good fit. And then Nesmith is the dark horse to start. He had a really good summer league. Yeah, he's looking a lot better. He's creating shots. He looks confident. He had a good finish to the season. He has energy. You really can't go wrong with that spot. I think it's going to be Richardson to start, but you might see Nesmith steal a spot, earn it, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Then obviously Brown, Tatum. Yeah. And I feel like, I know you disagree because we've kind of touched on it, but I think it's going to be Horford and it's going to be Williams' spot to steal from him. I'm not saying it's going to be concrete him, and I do think they're going to be spot starts for Williams, like situational. Horford's going to rest, but I think at least opening night, I would imagine Horford gets the nod.
See, I think that it's going to be very up in the air depending on matchup. I know you mentioned it last time. Like, if they play the Sixers, Horford's going to get the start. But I think other than – I'm trying to think of a way to phrase this. Other than times where Horford is specifically needed, I think Robert Williams will have – the starting center position, like when they play the Sixers, obviously. I'm trying to think of other examples of, like, if they play the Trailblazers and he has to play Nurkic, I think they might go with Horford, you know, guys like that. I think Jokic would still be a Rob assignment just because
you
of
think so I don't know.
I think that's up in the air. It's debatable, but I don't think they want to give Rob the bigger guys, and Jokic is bigger, but he's more post movie, not just, you know, Steven using Adams. Brute strength. Steven Adams might be a Horford assignment. Vucevic. Guys like that. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Vucevic can get on the outside, too. And I think
he killed the Celtics last year.
Yeah. Vuce is good. He's a beast on the offensive end. Other recent Celtics news. They've signed a couple guys to training camp deals. The Green Cornet is back. The Green Cornet is back, Sam. Come on. Good, that's news.
No. He was a solid contributor last year on a team that kind of needed it. Won them a game in OKC when Moses Brown played. Former Celtic Moses Brown played out of his mind. And then the guy from Utah who apparently got playoff minutes. So that's actually kind of intriguing to me.
Juwan Morgan?
Yeah. I mean, if he was playing in the playoffs for that team, the number one team in the conference.
He did not get playoff minutes. He got 3 minutes a game in two games.
Okay. So. Well, he didn't. I don't know who was tweeting that. But I've been fed fake news.
he struggled to earn regular rotation minutes. He's the ideal NBA body, if that makes sense. 6'7", listed as a power forward, sure. You know, good size, good strength. He hasn't shown much shooting the ball. He hasn't taken many shots in general. As it is, his total throughout his NBA career is 7 of 21 from 3 total in two seasons. So he hasn't gotten much of a chance. I went over some two-way guys I liked last time. Those stand if you want to know them. Admiral Schofield, Mason Jones, etc. Go check out it a couple episodes ago. But Juwan Morgan's fine. Luke Cornett is fine. Will either of them make the team? Probably not. I think the Celtics just probably want to keep their options open at this point. I'm curious to see how training camp rolls out. I need basketball back. I need any semblance of basketball back at this point. So training camp should be fun from that perspective. In other news, Celtics got their preseason schedule. It is I know they play the Magic, I know they play the Heat. Do you have the schedule in front of you, Sam, or do you know
October
what it is?
October 4th against the Raptors, those other two teams, and I believe there's a game against the Knicks in there. I'm excited, of course. I mean, we were just saying we need basketball back, but seriously, there's important storylines to this preseason. You've got a lot of guys on this team at or around the same level.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it last time, but it's better than last year because instead of last year, the level being very low level where everyone is, it's now a medium to high level where your role players are all pretty solid and concrete. So you're going to have Horford and Williams. I mean, you might not see a whole lot of Horford in the preseason because of his age, but Nesmith, Richardson, that kind of debate, you can see how it's going to go in the preseason. You're going to find out where Pritchard's going to find his minutes. I mean, these are all questions that are legitimate. I don't know. It's hard to figure out where Pritchard's going to get his minutes. Is Romeo Langford going to show us anything? You know, who is that fifth star going to be? I kind of already mentioned it, but even just to see who gets the nod the first game, how does Marcus Smart look running the point? I mean, there are so many different things. How does Jaylen Brown look? I mean, he just had wrist surgery. It's not like his legs or anything, but does he look confident? Does he look like he improved something? How does Hernan Gomez fit? I mean, there's so many
questions.
There's a lot of new stuff on this team. How is Udoka going to, run the team? What's the offense going to look like? Is it going to be better? I mean, there are so many things to be excited about. We've got, like, probably 3 weeks. It's the 10th today, so it's about a week.
Almost a month. A little under a month.
Yeah. But...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, October 4th is the Magic. October 9th is the Raptors. October 13th is the Magic again. And October 15th is the Heat. They played the Knicks on opening night, which is probably what you're thinking of. Knicks opening night is October 20th.
The 20th? I thought the home opener was the 20th.
Opener of the season is the 20th. Preseason ends on the 15th. But, looking forward to the preseason. I like all of those questions you mentioned. Not big on Romeo Langford, but we've been over that.
Well, now it's fair not to be, man. Like, it's his third year. He's playing in the summer league and he's not like dominating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, usually third year guys aren't playing in the summer league anymore. Jaylen Brown played his second season. I mean, we discussed this, but like they had similar paths, and then Brown goes in the summer league, lights it up for the first game, and they say, all right, you're good. You don't need to do this.
I will say Romeo's dealt with more injuries than Brown.
Oh, yeah.
I'll give him credit there. I don't see the pathway for him getting minutes on this team. I think Nesmith could be a starter at the end of the season. I'm really high on Aaron Nesmith. I think he hustles, which you can't teach. I think he's a good shooter, which you can't teach. Or I guess you can teach, but it's definitely difficult. Shout out Ben Simmons. It's just Romeo Langford hasn't shown me anything that would get him minutes in this rotation, right? You got plenty of playmaking with Marcus Smart. You got plenty of playmaking with Pritchard, Schroeder. And Romeo's a fine playmaker, but he's not at the level of any of those three guys, I would argue. He can't shoot the ball, right? His jump shot, it looks absolutely horrific, and you can't convince me otherwise. Maybe he improves to like a 32% shooter, but even at that point, it's like, like you got other guys who are better shooters. He's fine at like driving to the lane with the ball in his hand, but how many times is he actually going to get the ball in his hand? I just don't see a realistic pathway for him earning rotational minutes this season. I think he's more of a trade chip at this point because I think he can be successful in certain systems, but I don't think the Celtics system with this roster is one of them. Like the argument you were making for Carson Edwards, like, oh, he'd get minutes somewhere else. Romeo would get minutes somewhere else, just not here.
Yeah, I mean, his road to getting minutes is going to be shooting corner threes. That's what he did in the playoffs, and it's not his strength, but that's what the offseason's for. He looked okay doing it in the summer league. It wasn't fantastic or anything. He did make the big one to win the game against Atlanta. He made one in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
In the clutch, made one in the corner. I don't know. I'm starting to become out on him, but I think he played well in the playoffs, which is encouraging. But it's just like, how do you like downgrade from that performance in the summer league? Like, how are you not making an impact?
I just don't. They have other guys who can do what he does better. Yeah. That's just as simple as it is. I think
maybe you need wing depth because, in all honesty, like who is your backup like forward? Like small forward.
you got Aaron Nesmith, Josh Richardson, Jalen Brown, both... Juancho Hernangómez.
Jalen Brown's not backup, but Oh, I lost my train of thought. Oh, Richardson and Nesmith are more guards to me. Like
Nesmith, I think, is a forward. I think he's a small forward. I think at that point, I think shooting guard and small forward are interchangeable at this point.
I think they're pretty close.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think they're wings. I think they're all wings. I think Nesmith and Richardson can both play small forward. I think Juancho can drop down from power forward and give you backup forward minutes. Romeo's shorter than Nesmith, isn't he? They're the same height at the very least. Romeo's not that tall, right? Romeo Langford.
6'7".
No, he's like 6'5". He's 6'4".
Langford's only 6'4"?
No, yeah, Langford is 6'4", and Nesmith is 6'5". I'm pretty sure, geez. Yeah. Nesmith height. Yeah, Nesmith is 6'5".
Yeah, Romeo's only like an inch taller than me. Yeah, he has no future.
That's brutal realizations here. And Josh Richardson is, I think, 6'5 as well. 6'6". But yeah, so Romeo is undersized for small forward. He can't shoot for a shooting guard. He could potentially like transform his game into this weird ball handling combo guard, but he has no pathway to do that on the Celtics.
Yeah. No, he's going to earn it if he's out there. It's a preseason storyline for you, Jack. What's he going to do?
Nothing. I am almost completely out of Romeo Langford. I'm not hoping for failure. I hope he comes out and proves me wrong, but at this point in time, it's not looking great for me for Romeo. But yeah, I think now's a good time to cut over to our interview with Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report. We talk a lot about his new book, Built to Lose, how the NBA is tanking era changed the league forever. I already ordered it. I'm super excited to read it. Make sure to go check it out. Amazon, anywhere you buy your books, Barnes & Noble, all that good stuff. But yeah, I'll send it over to our interview with him right now. We are here with Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report, author of Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. How you doing today, Jake?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good, good.
I am tired. Very tired.
Sam just got out of work.
I worked the good old 4-to-1 shift, so here we are.
Brutal.
4-to-1. Like 4 a.m. to 1 p.m.?
Yeah.
Wow. Good for you, man. That is...
it's not by choice.
What do you do?
I work in news, so I'm an assignment editor. So I look for the news pretty much, but get there at 4, leave it. When 1 o'clock rolls around, it's a great shift. When the alarm goes off...
That's tough. I did actually want to talk about your book Built to Lose before we even got started here, because the whole concept is really interesting to me. Actually, I just ordered it. Like I didn't know you were an author until I did my research, and I ordered the book as soon as I saw what it was about. So could you talk about it a little bit? It looks super interesting.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, I'll use this opportunity to make the quick plug that anyone listening can buy.
Please do.
And anywhere books are sold, Amazon, if you want to get it quickly, bookshop.org, Barnes & Noble, my publisher, Triumph Books. I think we still have a promo code up right now. Fisher30, my last name, Fischer, gives you 30% off. But yeah, I did over 300 interviews for the book, talking to players, agents, coaches, executives, you know, you name it, people around the league, to kind of bring the behind the scenes, like real story of what happened from roughly 2013 to 2016 when, you know, it wasn't just Sam Hinkie in Philadelphia. Danny Ainge in Boston trades KG and Paul Pierce to Brooklyn the same night that Hinkie traded Jrue Holiday to New Orleans, right, to start that rebuild in Boston. And one of Ainge's disciples, Ryan McDonough, gets hired in Phoenix to do the same exact thing. And Daryl Morey, you know, people don't really realize all the time, came from Danny Ainge's front office. And Hinkie came from Daryl Morey, and Rob Hennigan gets hired from the Orlando Magic, or by the Orlando Magic, the year before, and trades to White, and all these teams were tanking for this 2014 draft class. Cleveland's in the mix there. You know, it was this inflection point of when all these analytical minded executives started coming to power and really looking at team building as this science experiment, as this cap sheet to manage, and how the NBA behind the scenes now has kind of turned into a marketplace, and a finite marketplace, where only 30 teams have the same type of financial restrictions. And, there's the markets at play based where city you live in, whatever. And, know, that's appealing and plays a factor on the talent and the players. And at the end of the day, you're all competing for one championship, right? And it's become clear that the best way to do so is with multiple All-Stars. And you look back to the Celtics in the 50s and the 60s, to the Jordan Bulls, to the Lakers, to the Big Three. Like, it's not a new phenomenon. Super teams have always existed. They're just now, you know, players have more agency now. And I think that's also a big reason why tanking is so important and why it became important in those years I talked about and we just wore in the book, is that if you're Philly, if you're Orlando, if you're Milwaukee, if you're OKC, even if you're Houston, like if you're not LA, if you're not New York, if you're not Miami, you know, the most direct way to get All-Stars is through the draft and hope that someone is, you know, becomes that, or they at least attract other All-Stars in free agency. And the easiest way to sign an All-Star in free agency is to have one already on your roster. So I think that era was just so important to A, you know, it created the lottery reform that we now have with four lotteries slots and 14% chance on the top three picks instead of the worst team having that big 25% number. But also, I think that period and it influenced player agency and the players trying to do what they could while executives are doing the same thing. And it's kind of set the tone for, you know, the league being in this, you know, big game hunting, just tinkering section that, you know, we now find ourselves in the state of NBA history.
No, yeah, that's awesome. I mean, take it for 2014. The Sixers got Embiid, but the Celtics got Marcus Smart. So who really won the draft there? Let's be honest.
Well, the Timberwolves did, of course, with Wiggins and then Parker. I mean, Celtics made out. They had two of the top six.
There you go.
Yeah, the Celtics rebuilt. And that's also why I wanted to do the book and really explain it in the behind the scenes in anecdotal storytelling. Like there's new details in every, I mean, I talked to over 300 people, right? There's new details, new scenes, conversations that these guys actually had behind the scenes that you're going to find every day. And, you know, I wanted to do that to show the human element of what it's like to be on a team that is supposed to lose, to be Marcus Smart as a rookie coming in as a potential franchise savior, to be Rajon Rondo, like basically realizing he's only there to get traded and wanted to force his way out of there. But also you have Evan Turner, you know, coming in to the Celtics team in the 14-15 season, and Isaiah Thomas coming in, like looking for their real shot and their first opportunity to really cement themselves as a true contributor to the postseason, because that's how players get paid in this league. So I wanted to pivot from Boston to Philly to Orlando to Sacramento, who's been mired in, you know, outside of the playoffs and in a tanking rebuild type situation for almost a, you know, two decades now. I wanted to show that why certain teams are still stuck in the mud, why certain teams like Boston get the three conference finals in 5 years, why certain teams like Philly haven't, even though maybe Philly even has the best player of all these tanking teams in Joel Embiid, right? The second runner-up in MVP. Mm-hmm. But those Sixers teams have had less success than the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown Celtics have when you really think about it. So I wanted the book to really compare and contrast all that stuff through all this, these anecdotal histories and these stories that you're not going to be able to find anywhere else.
No, yeah, 100%. Sam knows I'm big stats guy, big, you know, looking at the trends throughout history. So I'm extremely excited to read this book, and I appreciate you giving the synopsis. I'm even more excited now than when we started. But yeah, I noticed the Northeastern shirt, but you are a Philly guy. So you got a little bit of Boston, a little bit of Philadelphia there.
Looks like
so
Max Letterman, Philly guy with Northeastern.
Exactly. With the footsteps. But since you are from Philadelphia and you have mentioned the Sixers, and I will say I did my research. I found a line in one of your old bios that said lives and dies with the Philadelphia 76ers. So if that still remains true, we got to talk about Ben Simmons. I just got to ask your thoughts.
Well, I got to stop you right there. It's definitely not true anymore. I couldn't care less about it. I think to really do this job, like, effectively,
yeah.
I think you just can't care. I mean, I just don't. Like, I'm rooting for the outcome of my story, honestly, more than most. And not even that. Like, I tell this story all the time. I went to Philly. I live in New York now. So I've hit the big three in the Northeast. I'm from Philly. I went to school in Boston. Yep. I live in New York. And I went down to Philly reporting this book when D'Angelo Russell was on the Warriors. They were playing the Sixers, and long story short, like, the only opportunity I had to talk to D'Angelo was post game. Like, I went to their shoot around the night before at Drexel, and Kobe had just died, and D'Angelo didn't want to talk. So I go to the game. He doesn't talk pregame. So I have to, I made this whole trip. I spent the night, like, I'm there only to talk to D'Angelo Russell. I needed the Warriors to either win or at least D'Angelo to play well so he'd be in a good enough mood to talk to me after the game, right? I didn't care. Yeah. I really couldn't care less. So that's kind of where that all is now. But to your point about Ben, you know, I think why this is the number one storyline in the league right now, it's just been proven time and again that he, at this present stage, is not the second star to truly boost Joel Embiid into, you know, the NBA's title conversation. And like we just said, second runner-up or runner-up for MVP, like, clearly the time is now for him. You know, he's 27. He's in his prime. Like, Philly is, you know, right there. Well, they're one step away. They have to be looking at themselves as Phoenix did, as Milwaukee did, being that, you know, we're one piece. Not that I think Phoenix made the trade for Chris Paul thinking they were going to make the finals, but they thought that they were going to have a shot at it, right? And I think that's where Philly stands. Like, Ben Simmons, for all of his strengths, for being a multi-time All-Star, for being the runner-up and defensive player of the year, probably the best perimeter defender in the league, maybe one of the best of all time. Like, he's still in the postseason not a complimentary piece at this stage offensively for Joel. And that's kind of set the stage here for all these trade talks. And it's a tricky situation that we can get into more. But there's one that I don't see a clean solution right now either. I think this is a giant staring contest.
And the funny part is he's really, like, trying to force his way out. Like, he's not under contract for another 4 years. Like, he's just not going to play basketball if they don't trade him. Like, I don't know. It doesn't – that kind of thing never makes sense to me. I mean, it makes sense if you don't have a lot of time left, because you can say, I'm going to walk next summer, trade me, get something. But I mean, he's on an extension. He has no leverage. And plus, his value's down because of the playoffs, despite the All-Star appearances. I mean, I read something on ESPN where they highlighted the pass out of the dunk to Tybal, which has been the – real play that everyone goes to. But there's a reason why it's a story. Like, he is someone much like Kemba Walker would be when he, or Isaiah Thomas would be on the Celtics when they were defensively targeted. The defense for the other team is able to just isolate him and kind of forget about him.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think, you know, the league overall is trending in direction more shooting, right? Every single year, stretching the floor, shooting more threes. There's new records broken by every team, every the league overall on threes attempted every year. Just in the postseason, when the game slows down, when the offenses get crunched, you need that half court creation ability. Ben Simmons is, you know, so dynamic in transition and the open court with the ball in his hands ahead of steam. You know, he's tough to guard, but when the game really gets confined to a 45-foot by 45-foot box, and you have a 7'2" guy, you know, almost 300 pounds, commanding a lot of oxygen on the block, on the elbow, what have you. Having someone who's also, you know, a front court body size guy, 6'10", you know, 225, 40 pound, whatever, he, a huge, you know, athlete like that who can't shoot, it creates a lot of spacing issues. It just does. It's cliche, but it is what it is. And, you know, they've been trying to make it work for so long. And we just finally come to a head. I mean, this is a situation that any Sixers fan has closely followed. It knew it was going to come at a certain point, the Joel or Ben choice. And I think there was even a faction at the time when, you know, some people in the organization would have chosen Simmons. You know, I think there was. But here where we stand right now, it's just not going to be the case.
For sure. And I do want to get to Celtics, but the last thing I do want to ask you about the Simmons situation is, like Sam said, he's got 4 years left on his deal, or three, but I'm thinking four. Where do you think is the ideal place for the Sixers to trade him in terms of they can get the best package in return? I know Minnesota's interested. We all know Ben wants to go to California, but what do you think the most realistic package is that they can get back that would benefit the most for Joel Embiid's sake?
That's the tricky thing. Like, Minnesota has obvious interest in getting Ben. They've been long searching for a real power forward there. I mean, they were making inquiries for Larry Nance, who obviously just got moved to Portland for a while. You know, I think the difficulty with Minnesota, the difficulty with Sacramento, the difficulty with San Antonio, the difficulty with Toronto, all the teams that we keep hearing. There just isn't a package back that, A, makes Philly objectively better and fits better with Joel and moves their title chances up, and B, that also keeps a package on the table for them to go get Damian Lillard if and when Damian Lillard were to become available and request a trade, which that hasn't happened yet. It doesn't seem like it's going to happen anytime soon. Everyone I talked to around the league fully expects Dame to come into the season and give it a shot. But there's a chance that what happened with James Harden last year, and I'm not talking about the COVID protocols and the strip club stuff, but I'm talking about him getting there and realizing 8 games in, you know what, this is not where I want to be. All those conversations I was having with Kevin and Kyrie in the offseason about getting to Brooklyn, like, yeah, I want to do that. There's definitely a belief amongst some people in the league, Daryl Morey, I think, included, that Dame could do that too. And 10 games in, whatever it is, sometime before the trade deadline, there's a belief that Dame and Lillard could still request a deal. And in that case, Daryl Morey knows right now, if Dame Lillard would become available, Ben Simmons would be the best player on the board right away. He just would be. The Celtics, you know, if they theoretically had interest, you know, would Jaylen Brown even be on the table? I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, but with Philly, Ben Simmons assuredly is. And I think that's something to keep in mind here, too. The Sixers are operating from the position of strength here, not Ben Simmons' camp. They don't have to trade him. They don't have to do anything. But if they do, they want to know that they're going to get something back, some package, some return that could still keep them, you know, right at the front of the line to get Daniel Lillard if he were to become available.
That's a good thing.
Probably the biggest player.
Mm-hmm. Very good thing. Because of the power. I'm sick of it. I've had enough. Jack knows. I always complain about the players swinging around like that. Rich Paul is a big problem.
That's the easiest way to say it. I am a traditionalist. He's a traditional NBA fan. But yeah, I do want to shift.
Rich Paul, Jack.
No, we're going to skip over that. We're
skipping.
I want to talk Celtics. All right. It's a Celtics podcast. We've waited long enough with the Philly talk. But yeah, Celtics have made a ton of moves this offseason. Obviously, Brad Stevens stepping in as GM, trading Kemba away as soon as he could. The first thing he does. Getting Josh Richardson, trading Tristan Thompson, basically just changing up almost the entire team outside of, you know, Tatum, Brown, Smart, and Rob Williams, who they both extended. What do you think, or what do you make of Brad Stevens' first moves as GM? Do you like it? Do you think, you know, it's a very clear indication they're trying to get Beal this offseason, or do you think he was just trying to put the best team possible around the Jays for the short term?
I think a little of both. I don't think necessarily for Bradley Beal, but I think just in terms of optimizing flexibility. I mean, of course the St. Louis Bradley Beal Jason Tatum connection is going to be in mind. But I'll say there's a general expectation that Bradley Beal is going to re-sign in Washington. I mean, he's just, it's a $54 million difference in taking the full 5-year max he can get from the Wizards than going elsewhere. And that's a lot of money, you know, and he can just request a trade if he wants else, like after that. Right. And that's what Pelicans people were trying to get Anthony Davis to do though. And it didn't happen. So who's to say, but I think in general, I mean, the Celtics had a couple of things they needed to do this summer. They needed to address the point guard situation and they needed to address the front court. And they did half of that in one fell swoop and moving Kemba for Al. And I do think, I mean, obviously the connections with Al and Brad are real from their time together in the past. And, you know, I don't have it for certain, but like pretty sure that those conversations were being discussed in some capacity back at the deadline too. So like, I don't think it wasn't really a surprise that that happened so quickly necessarily on the surface as it was below the surface. But from there, I mean, I know that wasn't like a splashy offseason, but I don't know really what they could have done there. Very limited, you know, cap wise, working up against the tax. And they clearly wanted to add some more guys on the wing. You know, they were chasing wings before the draft. I had heard Kyle Anderson link to them and, you know, and Josh Richardson. And obviously, they go and get Josh Richardson. They give him that extension, which was definitely contingent. Like, it was being discussed during the trade. And you go from that to the Dennis Schroeder edition, where, you know, he's obviously been pretty maligned publicly for the whole turning down the 480. But like, he's obviously worth way more than 5.9 in this market. He's worth way more than $5.9 million, and to get him on a 1-year deal, meaning that he's going to be playing for that next contract, that's a pretty great. I mean, look at Evan Turner. We mentioned him earlier, right? Like, came on a minimum deal, and then he plays his way into a 4-year, 70-plus contract from Portland. Like, Dennis Schroeder's got something to play for. So you add that factor. I like Juancho Hernangómez. Like, I'm not sure what he really does moving the needle-wise, but, like, you know, they changed some things around the edges that at least, you know, I think they're better than what they were as they exited the offseason. How much better will remain to be seen, and how much better they can get under, you know, with good coaching from Ime Udoka's new staff also remains to be seen. But I think they had a clear strategy, and what they did makes sense. And, yeah, they maintain flexibility, you know, moving forward in general. And that's a big key, I think, overall, to be able to have the flexibility, even if it's not Bradley Beal, you know, if it's anybody, any trade, whatever that comes to mind. Like, Toronto Raptors, for example, never thought they were going to land Kawhi Leonard, you know. But they get in the position, and they do. So I think just maintaining that flexibility to be able to make moves in general is just a strong strategy.
Yeah, I love the offseason. Jack and I have discussed it. I think they did not make a big splash. You're absolutely right. But the big win is, like you said, they didn't have flexibility, and they made moves for fit. And that's really the most important thing. With the Celtics, I think it's always been fit. I think that's why you've seen them be able to go on some conference finals runs, because of the way guys fit. I mean, the 2018 run in particular, you were able to do it with two of your best players out. Horford obviously fits well with Tatum and Brown. He's always had a really good chemistry with Smart. I'm always happy to see Allen Green. And I think with the Beal thing, I've seen a few things saying the Richardson extension and Horford's contract would make a sign and trade work. So would that be a way he could get that extra $54 million if he was to go to the Celtics?
Technically, yes. Sign and trade would allow it to happen, but, you know, a sign and trade's complicated, and
of course,
it happened a lot this summer to make it seem more. And I kind of previewed that at Bleacher Report like a month or two before we were talking about how this was going to be the summer of sign and trade. But I think that's partially because a lot of teams, there are only a couple of teams with cap space this year, and there's going to be less next year too. So I would still expect there to be a lot of sign and trade activity next summer, being that I think it's only two or three teams at this point that are presently expected to have cap space. So that allows Chicago, who didn't have space, to go get Lonzo and go get DeMar DeRozan and make all these other moves too. But that involves the agent being on the same page, that player signing, like in the deal, both two teams liking the package and negotiating. I mean, Larry Markkinen sign and trade to get to Cleveland took, you know, 3 months. So it's not necessarily just an easy thing to happen, but it could. It certainly could.
We're all about hope in Boston. We got to keep the hope high for Bradley Beal. That's the goal. Sam mentioned his name, so I wanted to shift gears here. On our last episode, we were talking about expectations for each of the Celtics players. Brought up Marcus Smart, obviously just got a massive extension. Some liked it, some not. My ideal number was around 18. I think it ended up being 19 or so, which I'm not going to complain about. Sam loves Marcus Smart. I like him too, but Sam is a noted Marcus Smart guy and came out of the gate saying Marcus Smart could be an all-star this year. And I just wanted your initial reaction to that statement. Just agree with me. That's crazy, right?
I overturned the call. I did.
So I will say that a good friend from college, who huge Celtics fan, and we made a bet, $100 bet, 7 years ago, that Marcus Smart would never be an all-star. I'm not worried. He thinks he would be. I'm not worried about my bet.
All right. I think the reasoning was Marcus Smart's going to get the reins as a starting point guard this year. That's what all the rumors are saying. If he can put up, you know, say, what'd you say, 15 and 10 was your hope?
Yeah, I think I said 8 to 10. So and you agreed with 8. You agreed with
8. I think 8 could be a high-end goal for Marcus Smart in terms of assists.
I settled on, I think he has a shot to be most improved given the extra responsibility he'll get in a different category that's not scoring, because obviously you don't want him to really be trying to score, but as a distributor, I think mm-hmm. he does really well.
What do you think of Marcus Smart as the point guard this year in Boston? Do you think it's going to go well, or do you think it's going to flop?
I'm curious based off of, I wonder what that dynamic is going to be with him and the Jays, right? Like, they do a lot of on-ball creativity. And in that sense, like, he's probably good, like, a good fit in that regard, right? Like, not someone who is a floor general, run the ball, whatever. He's more of a combo guard, let's say. But I also think there's an opportunity for Dennis Schroeder to take that starting spot at a certain point, right? Like, I don't think Marcus Smart is set in stone as the point guard, but in general, he's always been someone that Brad loved and has been just a strong presence. He's been a backbone of that rebuild for a while, so I don't think it's anything too drastic. He's been a spot starter for years. I think it just is what it is.
Yeah, he's had a take on the starting role in the past couple of years. It's kind of shifted the thought process in Boston. It's like Marcus Smart is the ideal sixth man, and now he's just in every starting lineup across the board. So it's kind of interesting to see how that has worked out. But I wanted to, you know, you said you got to get going here soon, so I did want to ask you a couple more things really quick. Just kind of about the general landscape of the NBA, right? It seems like, obviously, Brooklyn, Los Angeles Lakers, that's quote-unquote everyone saying that's set in stone, that's going to be the finals. Is that your thought process too, or do you think there's any teams that are going to come out and challenge these two behemoths, I suppose you could call them?
I mean, that's certainly what everyone's thinking right now, but mm-hmm. I think a big lesson I learned in the book in terms of people asking me, like, was the process worth it, blah, 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 and you look at the Nets of last year, like, there's so many unseen variables and things that pop up that are unexpected, injuries, you know, player infighting, whatever. Nothing's guaranteed, and it takes a lot of luck and a lot of circumstance and happenstance to help you get there. So I would never just pencil it in. But then again, like, Cavs Warriors happened 4 straight years, so maybe we're just destined for this clash. Got to get Phoenix there to do. I mean, Milwaukee did what Milwaukee did. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows what Philly can remake their roster, and like right now, as good as the Nets are, they got nobody who can guard Joel Embiid. And Philly right now doesn't really have anybody to guard all three of their guys, but it's not like a shut and door scenario. I think in the right circumstance, mm-hmm. in the right, you know, optimization of what Philly can be. So yeah, I think, I mean, you talk to anybody in the NBA, they're fully expecting that to be the most likely outcome, but anything can happen.
Sure hope not. Worst case for Celtics fans.
That would be brutal. That would definitely be brutal. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all I had, you know, written down here today. I know you said, like I said, you got to get going, but is there anything else you wanted to say before we wrap this up? Tell everyone where they can get Bill to lose one more time before we get out of here.
No, I mean, I'm coming out. I'm kind of on a little vacation hiatus from Bleacher Report until the week of training camp opens up. But after that, I'll be back writing pretty much a story a week until August of next year. bringing rumors and news reporting, stuff I'm hearing out from the ether to the light. The book is out. It's been out since May. It's done pretty well. And if you're an NBA fan, if you're on NBA Twitter, if you like talking about who won the deal or it's draft scouting Twitter or whatever, like, there's something for every diehard fan in this book that you're not going to find anywhere else. And it's on Amazon, bookshop.org, Barnes & Noble, my publisher, Triumph Books, anywhere. And if you buy it, it helps me get the next one in the works too, which is definitely something I'm trying to do in the very near future here. So that's my plea and my pitch. And thank you guys for having me on to have the platform to talk about it.
Of course. Yeah, no, I, like I said, I'm super excited to read the book. I just ordered it before we started here. So yeah, thank you guys all for listening. Thank you, Jake, once again for joining us today. You guys can follow us at Bannertown USA on Twitter. And per usual, Sam, go ahead and wrap us up.
Yeah, make sure you give Jake a follow and get Built to Lose. It does sound like an interesting book. I did not know coming in. Jack did. And I'm sold. I'm going to have to go and pick it up, to be honest with you. I love insider stuff. I love hearing about how things work behind the scenes. Sounds like a great read.
Tell all your friends to buy it too.
You will. I'll make sure to do that.
You can follow Jack at Jackson1NBA. You can follow Bannertown at Bannertown USA. You can follow me at Sam LaFrance NBA. That's our show for today. See you later.